I would like to call to order the June 7, 2021 regular session of the Historic Preservation Commission meeting at 5 p.m. Mr. Lau, may I have the roll call?
Yes. Commissioner Bozeman has been excused. Commissioner Kasaus?
He waved.
You got to unmute yourself. There you go.
Present. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Honestad?
Present.
Vice Chair Kruger has also been excused. Commissioner Lee?
Present.
Commissioner Wilson?
Present.
And Chair Beal?
Present. Thank you, Mr. Lau. I will now open the meeting for a call to the audience. During call to the audience, you may address the commission on any issue you wish that is not on the agenda. However, it will not be open for discussion. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by the speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. At this time, anyone who is participating through video link may raise their hand. Those on the phone, please dial *9. And Mr. Lau, do we have anyone wishing to address the commission today?
Chair Beal, no one has raised their hand just yet. Let's give it a second if you don't mind.
Okay. Anyone there now wishing to address the commission?
Still not at this time. I believe you're clear to move forward if you wish.
Okay. Well, thank you. I will now close call to the audience. Mr. Lau, the next item.
Yes, next on the agenda is council liaison comments.
Mr. Solomon is not present at today's meeting due to recovering from a medical procedure. We wish him a speedy recovery. Mr. Lau, the next item.
Next on the agenda is presentations. Presentation item number one is Historical Society Update, presented by Henry Ziff, President.
You're on mute, Henry.
There we go.
Hello, everybody. I hope you all are doing well tonight or this evening. I'll just start right in with our report. Our outdoor tours at the ranch have been successful and are gathering momentum by the week. We had docents at six stations that took participants through the Hohokam and American Indian eras of the area, the push and the steam pump era of the ranch, the Proctor Lieber area, and the Heritage Garden. Each station had visuals, including new outdoor signs for the signpost positions. Pat Spurl, Jim Williams, and Sue Chabasian updated the signs, and the Oro Valley Historical Society funded $1,200 for the project. Most of the comments from participants, many of them residents, were that they had no idea of the history of the property in the local area. We also hosted a Cub Scout troop, their parents and leaders. We provided activities at each station, and the group had a great time learning much about Oro Valley history. We hope to engage similar groups in school groups next year. We will also reach out to senior residents and other groups for private tours. Our Heritage Garden coordinator, Joyce Reisner, has created the Steampump Ranch Book Trail. This is geared for a variety of children's age groups. There are 10 reading stations within the Heritage Garden pertaining to topics relevant to the garden, such as animals, ranching, crops, etc. This was funded with money obtained through private grants, or a private grant. Our programming year will resume in September, and we are hoping that the garage building construction will be completed by then so we can resume our outdoor tours. Given the recent changes in COVID mask mandates, we are planning to resume indoor exhibits in the Push House Museum in September. We are also looking forward to the installation of the fire suppression and security systems in the Push House so we can begin to seek outside collections sources for exhibits. And that concludes my report.
Well, thank you very much for that report. Sounds excellent. Mr. Lyle, the next item.
Yes, next on the agenda is consent agenda. Consent agenda item number one is review and approval of the May 3rd, 2021 meeting minutes.
Do we have any discussion on the May 3rd, 2021 minutes? Okay, I move to approve the May 3rd, 2021 regular session meeting minutes. May I have a second?
I believe Commissioner Honestad has raised his hand.
Okay, we have a second. Mr. Lau, the vote.
Yes, Commissioner Bozeman again is excused. So Commissioner Casas.
Hi there. Sorry, hey. Having muting problems on that one. Unmuting myself. I motion that we approve. I vote that we approve.
Thank you. Commissioner Honestad?
Approve.
Vice Chair Kruger is absent. Commissioner Lee?
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson?
Approve.
And Chair Beal?
Approve. May I have the next item on the agenda, please?
Next on the agenda is regular session agenda. Regular session agenda item number one is welcome new members.
So I just want to extend a welcome to our two new members. You can see them on the screen if you happen to have your computer open. This is Commissioner Nicole Casas and Commissioner Avi Lee. And we're very grateful that you have chosen to join us and wish to offer you a welcome.
Yes, we welcome you. We had great interviews and we have some very great talent coming. So welcome aboard. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next on the agenda is regular session agenda item number two, discussion regarding a proposed zoning code amendment to chapter 21 and associated chapters to revise the planning division work plan adoption process.
This is a staff agenda there.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
It would be Ms. Jacobs.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. It's my pleasure to be before the HPC this evening. I don't always get a chance to. I wish we were in person. I would be glad to see you all again. Thank you all for all that you do. We so appreciate your contributions to the town of Oro Valley. I'm here to just briefly go over what this proposal is that will be on the town council's agenda for next week. And the reason why it has been just brought to your attention for any conversation that you have or any questions that you may have of me is because the HPC is actually specifically mentioned in our ordinance regarding input into the planning work plan. So let me tell you why this came about. The town council, as you know, earlier this year, the council provided an opportunity for all of our boards and commissions to give input to their draft strategic leadership plan. They do strategic planning every 2 years. And it is from that strategic leadership plan that work plans are put together across all of our departments. And for whatever reason, long before I was here, there was something codified that had just the planning work plan. And again, remember, the work plan is the implementation of policy, right? So the policy is set by the town council. The direction and the strategic direction is set by them, but somehow one work plan was requiring separate approval, which really, under the council manager form of government, all work plans are my responsibility, right? The council relies on me, and I'm the one held accountable for the implementation of their strategic plan. And so the timing was just right. I actually identified this as something that I was like, why do we do that? Shortly after I came on board, gosh, more than 3 years ago, coming up on 4 years. And we just didn't kind of get around to it, but we were nudged when the strategic planning process came up again, as it only does every 2 years. And so the HPC now didn't have approval authority, but they had input on the work plan. What I'm here to tell you this evening is that the HPC's input on the strategic goals of this community are just as strong as they always have been. As a commission, through your liaison, you have the ability to suggest items for the town council's strategic leadership plan at any time. And in fact, your input is provided forward. The strategic leadership plan of the council takes into consideration not just the general plan, which is of course very important, but we have a lot of other different plans that are part of this, and frankly, things that aren't in the general plan. I know there's some confusion that the general plan is sort of, well, that's the only thing that we follow, but it's not. There's nothing in the general plan about the public safety retirement liability or anything like that. And so that's just a piece of what it is that we do. The reason why I'm here is I want to reassure you that just because this ordinance change is being proposed, it's really for just for checking box and for consistency with the council manager form of government, not to take away any input that the commission would have in any of the work or the strategic initiatives that the council would consider in their future strategic plans. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you or your colleagues have this evening. Thank you.
First of all, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on this. And I have a question. Is there some document that we should be reviewing or link that we should look at to see what this proposal is?
Certainly, I don't know. Two areas that you can find it. The first will be connected with the council's agenda on Wednesday, which will be posted Wednesday afternoon. But the other one is, if you go on the Planning and Zoning Commission's agenda from last week, that link will be made. And Brandon, maybe, or Lynn-Ann, you provide that link in there?
Yes, it is attached. Okay, so it's attached to the agenda that you all can, if it wasn't on the one you accessed, it's on the one you can go to the Oro Valley Town Hall, click on meetings and agendas, and it's in there. So yes, you have that document, you have access to it. It's very lengthy. The bottom line is that Mrs. Jacobs is letting us know, or Manager Jacobs is letting us know, is that you have been presented this proposal or this commentary year after year or every 2 years, basically with a look on your faces like, why is this coming to us? And what she's doing is saying, you can review it anytime you want and go to the council with comments, go to the meetings with comments, but it no longer has to come before you with you going, why is this here? Which is honestly, ever since I've come along, that's been the look y'all have had, or previous commissioners have had, because it's kind of one of those weird things, and now it's getting taken care of. So
right, it was something that I was like, why is why is that going to a commission, especially because you have no authority over staff? I do. Right. So this is their work plan, not the policy. The policy comes from the council. So anyway, that's why we're just cleaning it up. And I wanted to make sure that you all didn't think that there was some, you know, something untoward or nefarious in this. We are just trying to make the process be consistent with where it belongs in a council manager form of government.
And I'll be sure to, I'll email all commissioners directly too, so you don't have to find it on the agenda so that you have it in front of you.
Yeah, it is on their agenda because pulled it up. So, but thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the clarification. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes. Didn't have that page in front of me. Sorry, let's see. Next on the agenda is regular session agenda item number 3, discussion regarding the Oro Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan, item 3, historic neighborhoods.
So this item, this is part of the ongoing historic preservation heritage plan, preservation plan that we've been reviewing. And last month we went over Steam Pump Ranch. The actual document also was attached to your agenda today. If you want to look at it at some point in time and decide after our discussion, if you feel like there is anything that we need to change in that document. So basically it was Commissioner Bozeman and Commissioner Wilson that had the charge of this item number 3, which was the historic neighborhoods. And so Commissioner Wilson does have the name of the four neighborhoods that are the historic neighborhoods. One thing I am going to add as a brief aside comment is that we did just annex the area by Westward Look. And likely in the future, we will apply for a grant and try to get an updated plan through a consultant so that those neighborhoods are also considered. But that's in the future, because right now we do not have that in our current document. So with that, Commissioner Wilson, do you want to talk about the neighborhoods that were here at the time that we became a community?
Absolutely. Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. What I'm going to do, and it'll be brief, is give you a little bit of background on the Oro Valley Estates, kind of a little bit of history. Most of you know about it, just to kind of clarify a few things, and then go into the four neighborhoods that basically we're concentrating on as part of historic preservation positions. And this will be read. I apologize. I don't have it memorized. So in the first 20 years of the war, 1945 to 1964, construction within the platted subdivisions were limited largely to the handful of subdivisions, Oro Valley Estates, Shadow Mountain Estates, Campo Bello, and Suffolk Hills. What's interesting is this platting started back in the 1930s. This is incredible. With the exception of Suffolk Hills, these subdivisions would formed the core of the area, incorporated as the town of Oro Valley in 1974. The new town also included Linda Vista's Citrus Tracts, which was essentially underdeveloped at the time, despite its early plat date. Oro Valley Estates was part of an ambitious development project conceived in 1958 by Lewis F. Landon, a Chicago businessman, an avid golfer who had wintered in Tucson for many years. He assembled a group of investors in Chicago and began shopping for a suitable building site. Landon contacted Hank Lieber, son-in-law to Jack Proctor of SRP and the Pioneer Hotel. Lieber and Landon were interested in land along the south bank of the Cañada del Oro. The Cañada del Oro Ranch was owned by Francis Rooney, president of the Manhattan Construction Company, of Oklahoma and managed by George Push, the son of the original owner of the Steam Pub Branch. Unfortunately for Landon, Rooney sold the desired portion of the Cañada del Oro Ranch to another investor, Joseph Tyman. Before Landon could make an offer, Landon soon pursued Tyman to sell 375 acres of the South Del Oro property to Landon's newly created corporation, Oro Valley Incorporated. And obviously, the name comes from this, the town incorporated. The sale was made on May 14, 1958, with Landon required as part of the deal to build a golf course. Later that year, Tyman and Landon announced plans to build an elaborate resort on the Cañada del Oro property with a vast artificial lake, luxury hotels, health spas, swimming pools, quite aggressive. In October of the same year, Landon and his few others incorporated the Oro Valley Country Club. This was 1959, which has operated the golf course ever since. It's now owned by a management group, Club Corps, who's got a 20-year lease on the manager of the golf course. Landon also developed Oro Valley Estates on the land surrounding the golf course, and Tyman developed the Highlands and Mobile Home Park on the other side of the wash from the golf course. Tyman also built a large apartment complex on Greenock Drive. That's a two-story apartment complex on the north end coming in off of Oro Valley, Mobile Home Park. Tyman also built a large apartment complex within Oro Valley Estates. According to longtime Oro Valley resident, the apartments were completed before construction. Oro Valley Estates had gotten far, were initially rented to people waiting for their homes to be built in that area. Landon's use of the name Oro Valley, both for his development company and his subdivision project, seems to have been the earliest use of the name later adopted by the town. Real quick, give me about two more minutes to talk about Oro Valley Estates. The development of Oro Valley Estates is linked closely in the history of the town of Oro Valley. It was platted in 1959. Oro Valley Estates is an early example of a residential community planned around professionally designed golf course. Today, Oro Valley Estates is a total of 216 houses, just 32 of which, 14.8%, were built prior to 1965. Another 60 were built before 1974. Shadow Mountain Estates, this is the second one, was platted in 1959 as well, has a post-war curvilinear subdivision plan, which is also true of three other early subdivisions of the survey. Shadow Mountain Estates, Suffolk Hills, which is quite south of us, and Fairhaven Village. This type of plan became the approved standard for the Federal Housing Administration for sound neighborhood design after World War II. Suffolk Hills subdivision takes its name from the Countess of Suffolk, I think we all know this, whose distinctive Forest Lodge residence built in 1937. And that's along the Academy property, which is in the area of Suffolk Hills off of the east end of McGee at the school there. Shadow Mountain Estates, an extension of the original Shadow Mountain Estates subdivision. Shadow Mountain Estates is located on the opposite side of Oracle Road. It's also post-war curvilinear in design. It currently has low potential as a historic district because only 14% of the houses were built before 1965. Because 35 of the 57 houses in subdivision were built before 1974, the historic potential of the subdivision could be reconsidered at a later date. Obviously, as we add years, we bring those subdivisions in. Linda Vista Citrus Tracts 2 was platted in 1937. That's incredible. By owners Lou W.G. and Frida A. Skinner, the same couple who had platted Linda Vista Citrus Tracts in 1930. Lou Skinner had patented the land covered by these plats as two separate GLO claims in 1926, 1929. The smaller Linda Vista Tracts, located on the north side of Linda Vista Boulevard, was never fully developed and now holds only 14 houses, the earliest which was built in 1971. Linda Vista Tracts 2 has 44 houses, just five of which were built before 1965. I'm sorry I had to read that, but the importance of this is that I think we need to kind of maybe target a little more seriously, and I'd be glad to take this on, the area of designing these to identify homes as historic properties. And we're doing that. We had the first at Suffolk Hills, and Lynn Ann, thank you so much. There's others in Oro Valley Country Club Estates and in others that I think will fall into that designation. And we just need to, in my mind, need to probably do a better job of identifying those. And this has nothing to do with Lynn Ann. I think it's just basically the fact that we just don't have the manpower to kind of go out and do what we really need to do. So anyway, with that, that's my report. If anybody has any questions, I apologize. It was so long, but Lynn Ann, you've done a wonderful job, and we need to help you better. Or better help you. Thank you. Thanks, so guys.
I'll just add a couple comments. So I don't know how well y'all were able to tap into all of that, but as a reminder, one of the purposes of a certified local government, which is what y'all are considered, in that you're certified with the national parks for managing historic properties, okay, or overseeing historic properties. So that means these local registries or national registries are very important to our calling with the HPC. And so one of the things that I discovered as I began the legwork into Oro Valley Country Club Estates is that all of the original paperwork for the early homes that were built there were flooded out in a flood that Pima County had before the town incorporated. So the early documentation, who the builders were, which is all a necessary part of being on a registry, were all destroyed. But legwork could be very important in that, because I don't know about all of you, but with me, every time I bought a home, I was handed a bulk of paperwork with it. So it is, especially for someone like Commissioner Wilson, who also is a real estate agent, every time you talk to somebody in a subdivision, it's really important to find out, especially like Oro Valley Country Club Estates, where we don't have all the documentation, to find out if they happen to have it, or if it's going from owner to owner when the house buys and sells. Because if you go through Oro Valley Country Club Estate, you will notice that many of those homes are being altered and updated. And we wholeheartedly, believe in updating your property, but we want them to want the curbside view to remain the same, so that that historic integrity stays in place. So as we drive through the neighborhood, it has the same appearance that it did in, you know, its historic days. So anyways, with all of that being said, and that wonderful report that Commissioner Wilson read, what I would encourage you to do with each of these topics as we review them is go back, look at the document, and make some notes on it if you think there's some verbiage that might need to be altered in the end. Because what's going to happen is when we're done with all of the topics, like five or six topics, which isn't going to complete until December, we are going to want to discuss whether any of that document is in need of updating. So don't forget to go back and take a look and make some notes and bring that up when we bring up the document again. So with that being said, I will turn it back over to Chair Beal.
Lynn Ann? Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I don't know the procedure here. On this.
It's your topic.
I just wanted to let everybody know that over the last couple of weeks, I was able to meet up with Donna Landon, who is Lou Landon's wife, and she's living in their original house across the 11th Fairway at Oro Valley Country Club. And she gave me some insight into some builders of those properties. So I'll get with you. Bob Hansen was one of the builders of the three that she's involved in. Hers and the one on each side. So maybe a little.
I'm going to be meeting with her soon. So perfect.
Wonderful lady. Thank you, folks.
Okay. Oh, you're on mute, Chair Beal.
Thank you, Commissioner Wilson. That was a very excellent, extensive report. And when I met with Mrs. Delaman about a week ago, she also mentioned that we can keep an eye out for individual houses that could be on the historic register. Just wanted to add that comment. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Certainly. Next on the agenda is regular session agenda item number 4, discussion regarding a funding organization or 501c3 and how forming such an organization is outside the scope of the HPC.
So I'm going to introduce Tobin Seidels, our legal representative, to discuss this topic. I did want to let you know that basically the wording on that agenda item is a nutshell for you all. So if you wonder what we're about to talk about, it's all within that title.
Okay, thank you, Lynanne, Chair Beal, members of the commission. I'm sorry I wasn't here at your last meeting. It was my wedding anniversary, and I assure you, my wife says that is definitely a priority. So, and I agree, it is. So, anyway, I guess it came up about how you could start a 501c3 organization by yourselves in order to do funding for historic preservation. Unfortunately, you really can't do that. There are several reasons why. The first reason is you're not authorized to do it under the town code, because anything that deals with money is reserved basically for the town council. So you're not allowed to go out and independently do it. The town is its own 501c organization, and you can't have a subset from one that already exists. But The third reason is it's going to get yourselves in a lot of trouble, and this is the most important one. As you know, you have the open meeting laws, and the open meeting laws require agendas, and they require regular meetings and all these other things. And if you belong to another organization like this, you would form another 501c3, then you'd be in violation of the open meeting law, because you would be having a meeting that wasn't a meeting of this organization here, this commission. So you would just end up being in violation of the open meeting laws. You would basically have a quorum at another meeting and discuss things that this group would talk about, and that's not allowed under the statutes. So that's really why you can't have a 501c3. The open meeting law is the reason why there are a lot of problems with trying to form your own funding organizations. This is the reason most funding organizations are private, and they come to you saying, hey, or you come to them and say, hey, we'd like some money. And then that is passed on to the council, and you make recommendations to the council whether or not you should accept it or not. That's what's actually listed in the codes. So I understand Commissioner Honestad had a few words he wanted to add. So Commissioner Honestad, what was that?
Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Oh, now you're muted. you were unmuted.
Let's see here. Let's try that again, Commissioner Honestad.
Could you hit it again, Commissioner Honestad?
There you go. That's perfect.
Okay. Thank you for allowing my input. Over the years, I worked both in county government and in the federal government, and have had a fair amount of experience working with 501c3 organizations. And one of the paramount things on it is that you cannot contaminate the private funding organization by the participation of any elected or appointed officials. So the warning from legal that we could only get ourselves in trouble with a 501c3 is very, very appropriate. Now, there are other things that I think that we were thinking about at the last meeting that, while not strictly fundraising organizations, are support organizations. And over my years at the archives, I worked with quite a number of very active friends organizations. Each of the presidential libraries had its own friends organization, and the National Archives in Washington, D.C. also had a friends organization. And there was a separate veterans friends organization that supported access to veterans records in the St. Louis Records Centers. So friends have a lot of advantages, not the least of which they can constitute an excellent source of unpaid workers, docents in various varieties. But quite frankly, I never found one of them that was too effective in terms of trying to raise funds. Normally, what I have seen is that if a fundraising organization is set up, it is set up through legislation. And I'm pleased to hear that the town already has an existing methodology for accepting private gifts. And those, particularly when they are behind a campaign for a very prominent project, can be very effective in getting donations. At the archives, prior to the bicentennial of the Constitution, there was a massive fundraising drive to do a complete restoration of the two huge murals in the Hall of the Constitution. That was effective, but it also had a slightly bad tinge to it that we call the Exxon Valdez. Exxon was trying to buy good press and wanted to put their names on the mural, and we found that money to be not desired. So it's very important that the town council, as the legislature, must have full right of approval. Now, we may have a role in putting together a proposal for fundraising, but the funds themselves must go through the town council. So those are the basic comments I wanted to make. Are there any questions that I could help with? Or?
No, I do have a couple of things to add to what both Commissioner Honestead and our legal representative, Tobin Seidels, has said. And that is that that as you roll off, or if you happen to be friends with someone who is previously on the commission, those are the kind of people that can build a friends group. So if you know somebody and you really are interested, we're not telling you that you cannot go there. We're telling you that while you're on the commission, you should not go there, especially with the fear of if more than one of you did, then you'd be going against the open meeting laws. So, but you're welcome outside of us to reach out to other individuals and let them, because I know we had previous lawyers and stuff that might be perfect for this kind of thing, but that's aside from your role as a commission. So that was really the bottom line, is that as commissioners, this is outside of our scope.
Okay, if I could add to that slightly, the experience that I have had is that friends groups normally work for the paid staff, not for a voluntary commission. So it works best when a friends group has its official liaison with the commission through the staff and not through a commissioner.
Correct. In other words, I'm just saying you can reach out to someone and say, if you're interested, reach out to staff, not for you to say become an organization that's a sideline to the commission. That would be inappropriate.
And if they have money, they should definitely be contacting the town council, because right, they're the ones that have to approve it.
Right, exactly. So,
thank you, Commissioner Honestead. I'd say you summed that up about right.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for the prior review.
Thank you, everybody, for the clarification and the input. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next on the agenda is regular session agenda item number 5, presentation and discussion regarding historic preservation topics for certified local governments.
Okay, Mr. Lau, do you have my PowerPoint, please?
I do. Give me a second. this. And screen share. Get it set up appropriately.
Okay. This is a review for many of you that have been around for a while. And as you know, sometimes things are, they sink in better once they're reviewed. But I also knew we were going to have two brand new commissioners. And so as you just heard me mention, part of our responsibility is taking care of anything that the town owns or that happens to lie within our boundaries that is considered historic. We currently have a list hidden on our website, I'll bet now, because it was on our previous website, but that shows that we have Steam Pump Ranch as a historic property. The new block property within Suffolk Hills is another one, which, by the way, I did want to mention from Commissioner Wilson's presentation when he said, except for Suffolk Hills, that was because that was the last one to come on. So it was not part of the town when we first incorporated. So at any rate, that's what that comment meant. But slide number one, please. Or next slide, I guess.
Sorry, Lenance.
That's okay.
Sticking. Let's see. There.
There it is. So the Town of Oro Valley's Historic Preservation Commission is in commission's charge involves the safeguard of the town's cultural and historical identity. And that's quoted by the preamble of the HPC rules. Next slide. So tax savings, incentives for historic preservation. As tangible links to its past, a community's historic buildings reflect the unique character of its neighborhood and businesses and gathering places. Various federal and state laws have been enacted to support the preservation of these places through tax reduction, grants, and other financial incentives. Arizona's historic property owners can benefit from these programs if their property meets certain criteria. So what I wanted to point out is from Commissioner Wilson in these two pictures that are on this particular slide, in Commissioner Wilson's presentation where he talked about the two-story apartment complex that was used for those first homeowners to live in while their homes were being built. This is part of that apartment complex. And now they sell those as condos. And I would really like to get that apartment complex on our national registry. And I do believe the back information on that is available and that we can figure out who the builders and all that are. I haven't gone that deep in yet, but I do know that a former commissioner did. And so I'm pretty sure that we have access to all of that. Next slide, please. So the federal tax incentive, the investment tax credit program, permits owners and some lessees of historic buildings to take a 20% income tax on the cost of rehabilitation, such as buildings for industrial, commercial, or rental purposes. I highlighted that because that's the one thing that I'd really like to check into for Steam Pump Ranch as we get ready to move forward with renting that. If we could get a 20% income tax credit in advance, which I think they actually break that over a certain amount of years, but that would help with the rehabilitation process. That would give the town a little bit of money in advance. So at any rate, I did highlight that because I want to look into that. This program also permits depreciation of such improvements over 27.5 years, which is really beneficial to a property owner. For a rental or residential property, it's 31.5 years. 27.5 for the rental and 31.5 years for commercial property. The rehabilitated buildings must be a certified historic structure that is subject to depreciation, and the rehabilitation must be certified as meeting the Secretary of the Interior standard for rehabilitation established by the National Park Service. So that's why we try to use the exact same criteria, because we are hoping that all of the local registry homes will want to fold into a national registry. Again, those can be individual structures, or if we get 51% of a neighborhood, then it can be a neighborhood designation with the homes that are contributing being that 51% of the neighborhood. Next slide, please. State historic property reclassification. So this is what the state of Arizona does. For owner-occupied homes, which is, you know, what we mostly will be dealing with, this program offers a substantial reduction in the state property tax assessment for eligible owners. Huge deal. Everybody wants a reduction on their taxes. The state historic property tax program reduces the property taxes between 35 and 45%. The exact figure is dependent on the special assessment, which are specific to your area. A 15-year agreement. It requires maintenance of the property according to the federal and Arizona State Parks Board standards and is limited to property used for non-income producing activities. Again, residents. The property must be listed on the National Registry of Historic Places, either individually, and I'm sorry, this is repetitive because I just said it, or as a contributor to a historic district. The program is managed by the State Historic Preservation Office in conjunction with Arizona County Assessor's Office. And that's what I use to look up information on the homes, is the County Assessor's Office. State Historic Preservation Office, or SHPO for short, determines program eligibility and monitors property maintenance, property values, and tax calculations. The property must meet standards established by Arizona State Parks Board. And then I've listed a few of the websites there. Next slide. Increased property values. So one of the things that you'll hear sometimes from naysayers when it comes to these national registry or neighborhood registries is that they are worried that the neighborhoods will deteriorate or decrease in value. And what's been figured out is that that's not accurate. So houses often represent our largest economic asset. We all want this asset to improve in value. We know right now they all are, but historic district designation and the use of design review guidelines help to ensure that our investment in a historic area will be protected from inappropriate new construction, misguided remodeling, or demolition. But again, until those neighborhoods are aware of their value, they might do all that remodeling and everything. So studies have shown that over time, property valuation in historic districts tend to increase, sometimes dramatically. No evidence suggests that historic designation and the use of design guidelines lowers property values. Numerous studies across the country have shown that property values in designated national register or local historic districts generate an increase at a more rapid rate than the market. And the last slide, please, Mr. Lau. For Oro Valley's future, so locally designated districts protect the composite of overall economic value of the historic area. Every building or parcel in a historic area is influenced by the actions of its neighbors. And that's really where I think people in a neighborhood get a little bit more nervous, because they do tend to monitor each other. Like, don't do that to your house. You might bring us below 51% and then we won't qualify anymore. And so they tend to monitor each other. It isn't that somebody from the outside is giving them a hard time. but every decision one property owner makes has an impact on the property values of another, and design guidelines provide a level playing field for all property owners because they apply equally to everyone in historic area. So again, that's our goal, is to get so that we have historic neighborhoods. We are starting with the local historic registry and trying to build that. And that's the work that we're currently doing. So, and the reason we started with Suffolk Hills is because that information was readily available as far as the builder and the construction company and so on and so forth. So we really hope that somebody can help us get some homes going with within Oro Valley Country Club Estates. And I have a little comment on one of the homes in there in my my next item on the agenda, the department report. So with that, we'll close this out, Mr. Lau. Thank you. If anybody has any questions, I think you're allowed to ask questions, but.
Lynn Ann.
Yes.
Mike Wilson here. What's involved, and I'm sure this has been brought up and I'm a little slow, but what's involved in making a subdivision a historic district?
So a historic district is similar to a historic neighborhood. Usually a district includes some of commercial areas. So a historic neighborhood, 51% of the buildings within that area have to want to be on the registry, and they have to, 51% have to adhere to the Secretary of the Interior standards, which SHPO determines whether they're doing that or not. So the town itself would have to also have an overlay district, which we don't currently do that, but I have spoken to Buyer Vella, who's in charge of planning, and should we get to a point where we're nearing 51% on our local registry and it's going to be worth moving to that next level, the current makeup of the planning division would be willing to help us get there. We got a long way to go before we're there. We just got one home so far.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry to bring it up. Yeah.
That's okay. Like I said, we need to repeat the stuff because that, I mean, we are all always yes. changing and you don't remember the details. So that's why I review these things in a simple little slideshow month after month. Sometimes they'll vary quite a bit. Other times it's just minute changes, but it's just a review.
Job well done. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lee.
I'd just like to ask something educational. If we're part of the 51%, I'm going to sell my home, then the new homeowner would have to agree to be able to stick to those standards as well. And if they don't, then they risk losing that designation, right? Is that what happens? That's the only penalty?
So there are some things that I would want to check into for sure, but I did have someone from the SHPO tell me that the neighborhood doesn't lose its designation if we're over the 51%. All that happens is that home is no longer contributing. If that takes us, if like that is the marker and now we're below, that's what I would have to check with them on. But I do know that if we're over by any amount above that, that is gives us a careful cushion, it just means that home no longer contributes. And just to repeat something that may not have been said out loud, I think I said it in another part of this report, but people can make changes to other areas of their home that aren't street view. It's the street view that has to remain historically accurate. So even having solar panels in view of the street can mess that up. They can be on the back. And you can add a garage, which is something that I'll talk about in my department report. You can add a garage, but you garage doors if you had a carport, but because there were not really garages in those days. But you can't significantly change your home. It has to be things that the street view can't see. Okay.
Thank you, Mrs. Gelliman. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next on our agenda is department update.
Okay. So last month we did have a request and I had it removed from the regular agenda because I wasn't sure I would have enough to report. But just on Friday, Mrs. Alexander from Oro Valley Country Club Estates did reach out and give me an update. So I will include that in my department report. So there was a recent zoning code change that allowed for resubmittal. And for those of you that have been on the commission for a while, you remember Mrs. Alexander came to us. She requested that we support her request for a zoning code change because she has a historic home in Oro Valley Country Club Estates. It's a guest home, for our area. I've heard that there are other far more significant guest homes in other areas of Tucson, but for our area, it's substantial because we don't have many. And what we have had all but theirs is significantly changed. And so they wanted to detach their garage, which would move it into the space that wasn't allowed by the zoning code. But there was a zoning code change, and this is what she says. We have been issued a building permit that allows us to locate an enclosed garage about 4.5 feet off of the front of our house, attached at the roof line, with an encroachment into the front setback of 2 feet 11 inches. The zoning code amendment allows for a setback modification less than 10%, which for us means less than 3 feet. We have started some preliminary work to relocate the gas, HVAC, and other utilities and prepare for demo of our current carport. Our GC, general contractor, is on vacation, but when he returns, things should get moving again. So she sent some pictures of their architectural design and gave me permission to pass those on, which, again, I barely got this stuff, so we couldn't have it attached this time. We can attach it to another agenda. But at any rate, that's a very nice update to get from her that they got what they really had wanted from that that zoning code change. Last items here is that the restoration project on the garage, which was listed by our Historical Society president. So an update on that is that Charles Pfeiffer of Poster, Murto, and McDonald met with TEP to iron out electric issues a week ago today. The garage has been checked for asbestos and lead, and they are awaiting results and any treatment plan for a bid to be finalized. We are still on track to move in September. Now, I have heard that they got those results back today. So again, I think that they are now able to get a contractor in place. We have not selected one because we just got those reports today. We have a summer program at Steampunk Ranch. For those of you that have heard me mention that prior, it is well underway, but in 2019, that particular program received an Arizona Parks and Recreation Award as best of the best as an outstanding enrichment program. So we talk about the geology of the area, the history of the area. We bring in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics along with art. So we do call it a STEAM program at Steampunk Ranch. So it's not just STEM because we added the art. And it's really neat that it did win that award. I'll take this and show that we got this very cool award for it. So that's well underway. And this year we're also partnering with a program from the university. It's their program WET. And they're talking to the kids about the world around them. Last week they talked about watershed. So a lot of times it does have to do with water and what it does for our earth. So with that, that's the end of my department report. Does anybody have any questions? No questions on a report, I think. So anyways, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Gelliman. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Next on the agenda is future agenda items.
Okay, the Historic Preservation Commission may bring forth general topics for a future meeting agenda. Discussion must be limited to clarification. And commission members, do we have any items to add to the future agenda right now? And I'd also like to mention a clarification. Are we taking a break for the summer, Lynn Ann Gelliman?
Yes. So we will not have a meeting from for August. No, sorry, for July or August. I did see that Commissioner Honestad had his hand raised. So he's obviously got a future agenda item. But yes, so this future agenda item will not come up until September. And that month we meet on the first Tuesday of the month rather than the first Monday because of Labor Day. So as a reminder.
Commissioner Honestad?
Yes. One of the interesting things from today's discussion was the fact that the county had lost some of the records which are important for designation of historic properties. Yeah. And I unfortunately have had a lot of experience with not exactly recovering, but reconstruction of lost records. This all started when, in the late 60s, the six-story National Personnel Record Center over about 72 hours became the five-story National Personnel Record Center. And we lost over 70,000 veterans records. And we found a lot of creative ways to reconstruct a veteran service by using payroll records and other ways to at least reestablish a veteran's eligibility for veterans benefit. And I thought it might be useful if I put together a short report on some of the ways that we might be able to reconstruct the lost property records.
That would be wonderful.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Hanstead. Any other input on suggestions for the next agenda? I have one other input on that, too. I noticed, I really appreciate Mrs. Delamont's report on the historic neighborhoods. And as since we have a two-month break, I'm wondering if maybe on the next agenda, we could also put on reviewing the website information that we have that the public sees. For example, the public, as Mrs. Delamont mentioned, does not know the impact of what some of these modifications are. And so the agenda item would be to review the current posting of what we have on our website and see if we can improve that and document some of our work that we're doing. Okay. Any other suggestions here?
Tobin, do we have to get a second to?
We
yes,
do.
We have to get enough. Yeah. We have to go back to Hanestead's. Yes.
Yeah, we do. I'm sorry. I forgot.
Okay. Do I hear a second for Commissioner Hanestead's input for the agenda item of reviewing the restoration of historical document records?
I'll second that. Mike Wilson.
Commissioner Casas. Hey, Sauce. Also had her hand raised.
I'll put my hand down.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so we have a vote there? Yep. Yes. Okay, also, I guess we need to put it out there on the suggestion of adding to the website, reviewing the website for additional neighborhood documentation of what we're doing and what the public can see as far as how it impacts the neighborhood. All in favor, I guess, or a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, it looks like the motion took. Okay. So seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at what time we have? 6:03 p.m. May I have a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Looks like it took.
All right, everyone. Thank you.
Have a great day. Lynn Ann, thank you for your help.